It's 1:15 here on Giant 90.9. That can only mean one thing. Your host, Jackson White, is alongside Owen Pulley in HD1 Studios, and it's time for the Sports Spotlight!
Good afternoon here on this Thursday, January 27th. I'm your host, Jackson White, joined alongside Owen Pulley, and we will now welcome in 8-year NBA veteran who is now a color commentator on Indiana Pacers Radio, and also does some post-game, pre-game stuff as well for the Indiana Pacers, Eddie Gill.
Thanks, guys, for having me. I appreciate you having me on here today. How's everything going?
It's going good. It's going good. So, Eddie, last night the Indiana Pacers suffered their biggest loss, I mean, in least recent memory, and allowing the most points in franchise history. They lost 158-126. And the Pacers now sit at a 17-32 record, 13th in the Eastern Conference, and most of their team is banged up. Just lots of things going. I mean, what is going on right now with the Indiana Pacers?
Yeah, there's clearly a lot going on, and obviously some adjustments being made throughout this season, whether it's health concerns, injuries, and obviously when you throw COVID in the mix, that's a whole other animal that everyone has to deal with, including the Pacers. And unfortunately, it did end up catching up with this team, and now you have guys out with some injuries, the majority of your starting five out. So a lot of adjustments to be made, adding new guys to the mix. It's almost each day an adjustment in its own right. So that's part of the deal to some degree. Obviously, in professional sports, especially in this day and age, a lot of that's going on, and it's just trying to figure out a way to adapt and have some level of success.
Yeah, I mean, this team, they've had different starting lineups. Right now, their five, at least last night, was LeVert at the one, Dorte at the two, Torrey Craig at the three, Holiday at the four, and Batase at the five. And going into the season, I don't think any of those guys were really predicted to start besides LeVert. And, I mean, this team has had lots of players come out of the rookie draft class from last season with Dorte, now Washington Jr. just coming into it, and Isaiah Jackson as well. I mean, last year it seems like the rookie draft class has looked, and I mean, they've looked pretty good with the time they've had. But this team, lots of moving pieces and lots of players injured. So what do you think the feeling right now is for the Pacers, because they're down. Greg Doyle was not happy with them. Not Greg Doyle, but Mark Doyle was unhappy with them last night, it seemed like. So Boyle, I said it wrong three times, but they're struggling, and what do you think the feeling is for them just going in right now?
Yeah, right now I'm sure the frustrations are at an all-time high, you know, when you talk about the timing of last night's game. And it doesn't seem like it, but just a week ago they did knock off the Lakers and the Warriors in back-to-back wins. So it tells you how quickly things can change. And obviously prior to that they had hadn't had a lot of success from a win-loss standpoint, but you go get those two wins, you start feeling pretty good about yourself, and then you know, maybe a week later you have last night's game. So definitely a roller coaster of results and emotions going on with this team right now. You can't control health issues, you can't control injuries. All you can control is those guys that are in uniform going out there, being able to compete, communicate at a high level, and work as hard as they can, and then live with the result after that.
Yeah, and I mean, as of right now, the Pacers are a team that is in lots of trade discussions, but no trade is yet to be made. Do you think there is going to be a trade before the trade deadline, or do you see a moving pieces move in the offseason or now?
You know, historically, when you look at a Pacers franchise, they haven't been one that's been incredibly active before the trade deadline. So, I mean, that's really the only thing that you can really base it on. I really don't pay attention to rumors too much, because like 1% of the rumors typically ever happen. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's people like you and me generating rumors who don't really have any insight on what's going on inside that locker room or inside management walls, those types of things. So very few times do I pay attention to the rumors, but to answer your question, I really don't know if they're going to trade anyone before the deadline. Like I said, historically, that hasn't been something that this team has participated in at a really high level. So if you're going off of that, you know, chances are low. But obviously a lot of frustrations, a lot of different things going on this season. So there may be an argument that they look to do something because of those things, but I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, as the Pacers, like you said, have not really done anything on the trade deadline. Last season, they ended up trading Victor Oladipo for Caris LeVert. But before that, I mean, they've had basically two trades since 2000 before the deadline. And their last one before last year was dating back to the Evan Turner-Danny Granger trade. So the Pacers really don't make moves at the deadline, and I don't know if they will now. But right now, I mean, the Pacers sit at a 17-32 clip, and really the only exciting thing about the Pacers of late, obviously they had a big couple wins versus the Lakers and the Warriors on the road trip out in L.A. and California, but Lance Stephenson signing with the Pacers about a month ago. He's now signed multiple 10-day contracts, and Lance really just seems to give a boost to this team that they did not have before. I know it really isn't leading to wins, but I don't know if this team is in a win-now position. Lance just seems like he's having fun out there. They like playing with him. Do you think Lance will be signed for the remainder of the season, or do you think they're just going to continue to do this 10-day thing, or what's your opinion on that?
Well, there'll come a point where the 10 days will have to come to an end one way or another, whether they would like to sign him long-term or not. It will be the decision that they make, because it just won't allow you to continue the 10 days throughout the season. But to your point about his, you know, passion and energy that he brings to the game is definitely well received by Indianapolis fans. I think he definitely has been able to do that. I think we've seen some maturity in his game since the last time we saw him. He's making positive decisions with the basketball, whether it's to go score or to find teammates. He's making quicker decisions, which is always good, versus, you know, holding on to the basketball, letting the defense set, and then try to make a decision. It's a little bit more problematic to make plays when you do that. So I think he's done a better job of that. He does create a lot of excitement. There's a buzz around the team when he's there. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they were able to make that move and keep him for the remainder of the season. That clearly is still yet to be determined, but he's definitely been a bright spot here over the last couple of weeks for the Pacers.
Now, Eddie, I know that the Pacers have had this kind of stigma of being this kind of mediocre-ish team, having five straight seasons getting sent home early in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Now, the Pacers do have a young talent in Chris Duarte, and I feel like they could build around him in years to come. But how do you think the Pacers could build around him?
Well, he's a guy who can obviously drafted as a guy who's, you know, quote-unquote older rookie, but that means he's got some experience, right? He's got a lot of playing experience, got some life experience, and he comes in as a guy who's ready to play right out the gate, and I think we've seen that from him since the start of the season. Whether he's a starter, whether he's coming off the bench, he's been able to be productive in both roles. So with his scoring ability, that can only grow. It'll also grow, and his growth will be obviously on the defensive end as well. But he's also been a guy who has been able to make plays as well. So if the team decided to go that route, I don't know if the weight that they would put on his shoulders right now, because considering his status in the league and just being a rookie, his first time there, like I said, he is a more mature rookie, but I think that's a lot to put on a young player right now. So I don't know if they'll go in that direction anytime soon.
Yeah, I definitely don't see them going just on Duarte's shoulders immediately. But I think he is going to be a big piece in the Pacers' future. I mean, he is 24, the oldest rookie in this last draft. And like you mentioned, he is mature. And he's played it. He's played like it. He's played like a 24-year-old in this league. And then they have some raw rookie in Isaiah Jackson. Isaiah Jackson brings a lot of things to the Pacers that they, I mean, he kind of is the same premise of a Miles Turner type. Obviously, Miles Turner is taller than Isaiah Jackson and a better just all-around player. But Isaiah Jackson's only 20. And he can block shots at a high percent level. And he's been able to shoot a three. I mean, he hasn't really shot it in the NBA yet, but down in the G League, he waited to go 5 for 5 a couple of weeks ago. So Isaiah Jackson is a guy. I also do think the Pacers could build around Isaiah Jackson, knowing, I mean, I know Miles Turner possibly could be moved. I don't want to see him get moved, but I know that that's kind of rumored. So do you think Isaiah Jackson, I mean, his role has increased all season. He's only 20. I mean, what do you see them doing with Isaiah Jackson?
I love the potential in Isaiah Jackson. I think he's a guy who has an extremely live body with in terms of his athleticism, quickness, the way he gets up and down the floor. As you mentioned, he can protect the rim. I love the potential he has out on the perimeter, being a perimeter defender against smaller guys, because he does have that quickness. He has a second jump that a lot of guys don't have. So he brings a lot to the table just in raw tools that a lot of people don't have. You referenced him being 20 years old, so he's going to learn the NBA game and learn how to manage his athleticism and maximize it right now. I think he has one speed right now. Once he learns how to change those speeds and be able to use his athleticism in a timely fashion, he's going to be that much more impactful on the court. So those are all things that he'll learn, but he has a number of things that you cannot teach, that you just cannot try to duplicate, you know, on a court. He's a guy, he has a lot of gifts that he's born with, and he's a guy who has a great motor, and looks like he's a guy who's willing to work to get better at his game. So I love what I see in Isaiah Jackson, and obviously we referenced Chris Duarte, and we're able to find an undrafted guy like Dwayne Washington Jr. Mm-hmm. I've been really impressed with what the Pacers are able to do with those three guys.
And about
and actually throw Keeper Sykes in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he's done well for himself. Really happy for him. He's got an incredible story. So those four guys, I really do believe the Pacers have done a nice job.
And Kiefer, being 28 years old, but he just came in and played some big minutes as well, starting a few games whenever Brogdon and all that missed time. But a lot of young guys making the most of their minutes. But a guy who's been on the team now for three seasons, this is Goga Batadze, has been starting in a lot of the past couple games. Last night he had 17.6 rebounds and only 19 minutes of play. Goga has kind of been up and down all of his career here in Indiana. I mean, what have you seen from Goga as he's now starting? And, I mean, do you think he could be a player that they – I don't know if he would ever be a starter-type caliber, but, I mean, it does look like he's improved from last season to now.
Yeah, I think he's made great improvements. He's done a lot with his time and the challenges that present themselves when you're getting a lot of DMPs and just trying to stay ready. Keep yourself in a good strength and conditioning standpoint, and then also have some sort of rhythm. It's incredibly challenging. So to be able to see him go out there these last couple games and play with good rhythm, play with good confidence, be efficient offensively. He's done a nice job in the pick and roll game, finding spots in the defense where he can just catch and finish right at the rim, taking advantage of his size against some of these teams playing small ball. He's done a great job there. And all the while he's doing a nice job of rebounding it. So he's definitely helped himself. It's hard to say where he fits, you know, long term with this team. Obviously, they've got a lot of guys out who typically play those minutes, so it'll be the kind of determined once if they decide to make a move, if they don't make a move, when guys get back from a health standpoint, and just where those minutes are available. Because at the end of the day, you need an opportunity, and if the opportunity isn't there, you don't have the chance to flourish and grow personally. So. We'll just kind of wait and see, you know, what this team decides to do, and then also, again, with the health standpoint.
Yeah, and then you look at it, and obviously you don't like your star players being down with injury, but with this team sitting at 17-32, it's kind of nice. I mean, obviously I want our players to be healthy, but it's nice to see other players step into roles and see what they can do with a given time and minutes, because Batadze really has had really too many minutes since getting drafted here, and other guys as well. I mean, like Dune Washington Jr., he's a guy who, with everyone was healthy, would probably not play at all. And he's gotten some big minutes, 7 threes a couple nights ago, so he's a guy who can shoot it. O'Shea Brissett's a guy who came on at the end of last season, only played 5 minutes last night, but he's been taking the minutes as much. But a player that has missed over 200 days, I think it's 287 now, T.J. Warren, has not played really since the NBA bubble. He played two games last season, I believe versus Boston in the first game of the year, I think versus Cleveland. I probably am wrong on the second one, but T.J. Warren has not played in practically two seasons. He has been weeks away for 3 months now, and I know you probably don't know really much on his injury status, but I know you see him in shoot around. He's been shooting it around. I mean, what do you think about T.J. Warren? Do you think he'll play this season? Or do you see him returning next season? Or what's the future look like for T.J. Warren?
Yeah, that's a great question. But the most important thing you said is I don't know. because I don't, genuinely, I'm not sure what the status is. Obviously, with the direction the team is headed and some of the frustrating losses they've had up to this point in the season, you know, they have some decisions to make as to, you know, whether it's to, from a precautionary standpoint, to keep him out, or do you want to get him get back going? You know, first and foremost, his health is the most important thing. So if he's actually ready to go, you know, when do you allow him to rejoin the team and allow him to get back out there on the floor? So, yeah, he's a guy who they've missed incredibly here throughout this season. We saw what he was able to do prior to injury, and he's clearly an impact player who can get it done. So I'm not sure if we see him or when we see him. So I hesitate to speculate on that at all, but I can assure you I'm looking forward to seeing him at some point, whether it's this season or next.
Oh yeah, I mean T.J. Warren in the bubble was bubble almost MVP. He was averaging 30 a game. He was really shooting it, and then he got hurt, and it's the same foot injury that has been lingering. I think Sabonis had the same injury as well. And the foot injury, I mean, it can in some ways can be worse than a knee injury because it just lingers and it does not go away. But the Pacers now, like I've mentioned multiple times, sit at a 17-32 record, 13 in the Eastern Conference. What direction for the remainder of the season? I know we're past halfway through the year. What direction do you think this team is going to go? Do you think they still feel like they can make the playoffs, or do you think they're just trying to win one game at a time?
Yeah, honestly, I think right now it's about, you know, winning the day, winning one day at a time. When you get this level of frustration, obviously this team came in with high hopes and expectations for good reason because they've had some success over the last couple seasons. You know, you take last season out of it, obviously they didn't make it to the playoffs, but prior to that had been, you know, getting to the playoffs with regularity. So so this team coming to this season with those same hopes to get back. And, you know, you have the roster to do so, and you just haven't been able to do it. So, as of right now, I think this team is just trying to get from one day to the next in terms of finding ways to be positive, you know, around each other, obviously, continue to uplift each other, meanwhile holding each other accountable, and then go out in these games, even though you're shorthanded, with the ability to compete and win a game.
Yeah, and then finally, this Pacers team, obviously, they have some injuries. They all haven't been healthy, really, for the last 2 years. They've had some pieces move around. Oladipo going out, LeVert coming in, and some other places like Torrey Craig coming in now. Dorte and Stevenson's back. What do you think the biggest need is for the Pacers entering the offseason? I know that is far away, but there's obviously positions that they need filled. I mean, what do you think this team needs to be able to compete to years to come?
Man, it's hard to evaluate just because the health has been such a big issue for this team over the last couple of seasons. Even you go back to Victor Oladipo gets hurt, or Victor Oladipo, you know, was able, got hurt, and you know they didn't have him in that Boston series. They lose to Boston the next season. They lose to Bonus. They lose to Miami in the playoffs. So health has been a major concern for this team for the last couple of seasons. So I would say this team needs to get healthy. You know, even though injuries are definitely part of the season, all teams are dealing with it in some shape, form, or fashion. But not significant injuries where you have guys missing 30, 40 games and that kind of thing. When that happens to you, it really can derail what you're trying to do, especially if you have multiple guys going out. So I think to make a true assessment, you need to try to get healthy. Otherwise, it's hard to evaluate.
Yeah. I don't know if this team will ever be healthy. It's kind of the question. If they were healthy, right, they could do this, but they haven't been. So, I mean, that's kind of just the lingering question about the Pacers. But switching topics now to kind of more about you. You played 8 years in the NBA, and then, I mean, you bounced around. You played on multiple teams, journeyman. And then now since 2016, you've been working with the Indiana Pacers doing lots of things. Now you do you work on the radio as a color commentary. You do post-game, pre-game stuff. I mean, you've bounced around. What's it like having that be your job?
You broke up that last little bit. Finish that last question again.
What's it like working like for the Pacers, doing everything you do for them?
I got it. No, it's been awesome. It's been awesome. They've been incredibly gracious and afforded me with some opportunities. Obviously, here from the broadcasting standpoint, doing stuff on the radio as well. I mean, it's been really good. I've been really fortunate to have the opportunity. I enjoy the people that I'm working with. It's a great group, and I've really enjoyed it. It keeps me tied into the game. I love the game. The game of basketball has afforded me a number of different opportunities, and I'm forever grateful for that. And this is just one of them.
Yeah, and then also I know that obviously it's really easy to prep for an NBA game. What do you do to prep for each team and every game you have before going into a pregame or a radio or whatever?
Sure. Yeah, I can't take I take limited credit, if any, for what goes into the prep work. We have a great producers in the background, great stat people in the background. They're tracking down a lot of this information for us to be able to utilize in our pregame shows and obviously postgame shows and that kind of thing. Me personally, one of the biggest things for me is just to make sure I'm in tune to the players watching the games. And quite honestly, I love the game so much, whether I was doing this or not, I'm going to watch the games and have a good understanding of what's going on. So, but as far as the prep work, I really got to give the bulk of the credit and the lion's share of the credit to our producers, Ken Softman and Brian Woodrum, and guys like that, are really get a lot of work done. Jeremiah Johnson does a lot of work to prepare for our pregame. So those guys get the lion's share of the credit, especially when you're speaking about the prep work.
And finally, Eddie, before we let you off here, do you have any advice for anyone who possibly wants to be in your chair doing stuff with an NBA team or a sports team? Like, what advice would you give to someone one day hoping to be in the seat that you're in?
I would just say, obviously one of the obvious ones is just working as hard as you can to perfect the craft and know what you're doing in the craft itself. But I think that probably goes without saying. But beyond that is just trying to establish a network of people that are in the business. See if there's any internship opportunities or even if it's just being able to shadow someone who's been able to do it. Just have conversations with people who are doing it, who are in the business, who have had some success with it, who have had some failures with it, and just really just trying to build that network of people that are in the business and just learn from them, learn from their successes and their failures. And I always say learn from other people's experiences, good, bad, or indifferent. Just try to do that as much as you can, especially if you're younger into the game and don't necessarily have a whole lot of experience. You want to just try to gather as much wisdom and knowledge from other people as possible.
And yeah, that's really all we got. Thanks again, Eddie, for joining us here on the Sports Spotlight, and good luck for the remainder of the season.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. You guys have a good one.
All right, thanks, Eddie.
You too, Eddie.
Once again, we'd like to thank Eddie Gill for joining us here on the Sports Spotlight. That's a good Pacers upside and a little bit of what it takes to be a Pacers, really just working with the Pacers in any part, doing radio, doing TV, and, lots of people. All these NBA teams, all their guys who work their games, their play-by-play, their color commentator, Eddie did a good job there of showing how much the producers mean to really – everything that the team does from a standpoint of an analyst, because the producers really, they do all the prep, they do everything, and they deserve lots and lots of credit. And once again, thanks to Eddie Gill for joining us on the Sports Spotlight talking Pacers after they had a rough loss, 158-126 last night versus the Charlotte Hornets. But we have lots more Sports Spotlight coming your way, and the Indiana Hoosiers get a big win over Penn State last night, a much-needed victory after losing to Penn State earlier in the season. And then the NFL Conference Championships are going to be underway this Sunday for a chance to go to the Super Bowl and more. So make sure to stay tuned to the Sports Spotlight. We'll take a quick break and come back with some more Indiana Hoosiers news. We'll be right back.
I'm Tiffany. I have some tips for you on how to quit smoking like I did. I threw out my ashtrays, lighters, and matches, and it worked. To help me with cravings, I put a picture of my mother in my car. She died of lung cancer when I was only 16. Now I have a 16-year-old daughter. That picture of my mother reminds me that I don't want to miss all the things my daughter is going to do in her life.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
I kept on trying, learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
We did it, so can you.
For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
First, I hold my hands out like they're on a steering wheel. Then I look over my shoulder. One, okay, cool guy. Two, three times. Next, oh, I put it in reverse. Meep, meep, meep. Then I take it up and down, up, up and down. And that, kiddos, is called the forklift.
Dance like a dad. It's a great way to make a moment with your kids.
Now that's dancing. Sure beats flossing.
Visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I work out every day. COVID won't kill me.
I'm 24. COVID won't kill me.
I have antibodies. COVID won't kill
me. It's been a long week. COVID won't kill me.
I'm 25. COVID won't kill me.
I'm partying outside. COVID won't kill
me. I don't need to wear a mask around my friends. COVID won't kill
me. I'm 23. COVID won't kill me.
If I haven't gotten it yet, COVID won't kill me.
I'm young. COVID won't kill me.
Famous last words. Don't let them be yours. Socially distance. Mask up, America.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Ask yourself what you will miss more, your children or cigarettes. As long as I can remember, my mother smoked. She died from lung cancer when I was 16. I could not take the chance of continuing smoking and not being here for my daughter. I know how much I needed my mom still, and I didn't realize it until I had lost her.
You're not just quitting for yourself. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
And welcome back to the Sports Spotlight here on this Thursday, January 27th, only 4 days away from my birthday. So,
woo-hoo.
But I'm your host, Jackson White, joined alongside
your birthday's
now,
coming up, huh?
Yeah, turning 18.
Woo, Jackson.
The big adult.
Yeah.
But now joining me, John Easter, the WBDG general manager. Talking a little bit Indiana Hoosiers.
Hoosiers?
They won a game last night.
They did?
Versus a team that they lost to earlier in the season, away game. They played this one at home. They had a big win versus Penn State. And obviously we have not yet to talk about this, but they did lose a game in the suit a couple days ago as well. So that whole entire thing is
that
now...
That thing's over.
Yeah, that's sad. But the Hoosiers, big win versus Penn State. I mean, it's always tough in the Big Ten, but I mean they don't really lose at home, and they haven't this season.
Yeah, and nice win against Penn State, a game where they just really dominated in the first half, kind of different than how they played against Michigan, but looked like the Hoosiers really got out. They lose Rob Phinisee to an injury, which is a little bit concerning, obviously. Still don't know exactly what's going on with that, but it was some sort of leg injury. Wasn't really able to put much weight on his leg, so non-contact injury too, which is always kind of concerning when you see something like that. It's concerning when you see anybody get hurt, but when it's a non-contact injury kind of to the lower leg, you know, you start speculating about what it might be there. But certainly Rob Phinisee is a big part of what IU does, and they'll have to find somebody who can fill that role of being kind of the decider where the ball goes in the Hoosiers offense. So that's a little bit concerning. But Indiana didn't really finish the game well against Penn State. I know Penn State outscored them by 12 in the second half. They allowed 40 points in the second half, but you know, really how they scored, what, 47 in the first half, in the first half, so
to 17.
It's kind of hard to complain too much about that, because I mean, it's just human nature to kind of let up a little bit when you have that big of a lead. But Indiana gets the win, a big win at home against the Nittany Lions.
So they now sit at 15-5 in this game. Trace Jackson Davis played pretty good, 15.6 rebounds. Race Thompson, 18.6 rebounds. Then Xavier Johnson led the team in scoring with 19.
And just a couple of posterizing dunks, too, by Trace Jackson Davis. There was one in the second half that, you know, it just was just posterizing.
And, the student section for the Hoosiers last night, oh, my. I mean, I just saw a picture on Twitter, and It was packed in Assembly Hall last night.
Have you been to a game at Assembly Hall?
I have not.
Should be something you do.
Oh, I'm going
at some
to.
Point because it's a special place. I'd like to go there. I'd like to go to Mackey too, just to see what that's like. That'd be a little fun to go around to some of these different arenas and watch some college basketball. But Assembly Hall is a special place. I know somebody tweeted out a picture of the balcony last night. Mm-hmm. What it's like to be up there in the top row of the balcony. I've been up there, and you know, you kind of think that birds and planes and things fly between you and the court because it's so high up there. But Assembly Hall is unique arena. I think Gus Johnson calls it the Carnegie Hall of basketball because it was designed by people that design performance halls. Mm-hmm. That's the way it was designed. So pretty cool place and great place to see a game. And the Hoosiers are back to being pretty tough in the friendly confines of Assembly Hall unless you play Michigan.
Yeah, unless you play Michigan. Michigan, let's go back to that game. Michigan's only 9-7 on the season. They're not that good.
No.
I think they're beatable. They lost a lot of pieces in the draft last season, in the NBA draft. They're 9-7, but they beat IU by 18. IU, yeah, in the first half got down only by 8, and then in the second half they just could never really close the gap. They lost by 18. So
got off to a really horrible start in that game. Mm-hmm. And just kind of worked their way back in it by halftime. And then the second half, you know, Michigan pounced on them again. And after that, it was over. The difference, though, Michigan hit 6 more three-pointers. You do the math. 6 times 3.
That's the difference.
18 points right there. And so, you know, Indiana just didn't shoot the ball well. They didn't play good defense, especially on that perimeter. And that's how you lose 80-62 at home.
Yeah, now, I mean, this team, I think they lack one thing. I don't think they have a true ball handler.
Well, they're definitely an imperfect team.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, you know, it's like when Mike Woodson wins a game, everybody loves him. When he loses a game, everybody wants to come in and say he can't coach. I don't think that...
He can coach.
That a guy who defeats Purdue... like he did and has beaten Ohio State this year and has had the success that he had with the New York Knicks and the National Basketball Association.
It's hard to win with the Knicks.
He can coach. Mike Woodson can coach. It's just that these aren't his players. He didn't recruit them. He did a heck of a job to keep the guys that he wanted to keep and worked real hard to make sure that everybody stayed on the boat. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see down the line when he gets to recruit his own guys, the kind of teams that he builds. Because, you know, he was a basketball player, so he's going to know how to build a team, I think.
So, IU plays a game on the road this Saturday, January 29th at 2:30. They travel up to Maryland. Against a Maryland team.
Maryland.
Yeah. And it's an away game. IU's not good at those.
Right.
But
it's a game that Indiana should win.
Yeah.
I mean Maryland lost their coach earlier this year, mm-hmm. just kind of quit because he knew he wasn't getting the job done. So Danny Manning, who of course IU fans and fans in general remember as the great Kansas player, played in the NBA, also coached at Wake Forest before coming to Maryland. You know, he is right now the interim coach of the Terrapins. So that's a guy that many IU fans will remember, but right now Maryland is around 500, just like 11, everybody in the Big Ten.
11-9.
Yeah, so he's trying to do a good job there. I know Maryland fans are not patient at all. They want that program to be where it should be. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a top 20 all-time program, no question mm-hmm. about it. You know, used to be in the ACC, joined the Big Ten a few years back, but certainly, I know that they want that program to get back where they want to be. And how do you do that? You beat teams like IU, who's also a program that's trying to kind of revitalize where it used to be. So these two programs have a lot in common. Indiana's a little bit further down the line right now, I think, on the rebuild. But I think that you'll see, hopefully, the Hoosiers come out and understand, you know, how to close a game on the road. I think that's mm-hmm. been their biggest problem. They've had chances. They've been in just about every game. They haven't been blown out that much except by Michigan. You know, I think pretty much most of their road games they've been in, they just haven't been able to close it out. They couldn't close out the game at Wisconsin, couldn't close it out at Penn State the first time around, couldn't close out the game. What others am I forgetting? Syracuse, couldn't close that game out.
Overtime.
You know, that game went to overtime. So they just need to figure out how to close out some games. They'll be fine.
Yeah, and just another Big Ten matchup on the road. It's hard to win on the road in Big Ten. We've been saying that all
brutal.
Year.
Brutal. And I mean, even going to Northwestern, it's hard to win on the road.
They'll do that soon.
Yeah.
Soon. But after the game versus Maryland.
Maryland.
They don't play for a week, so they get some rest, and then they play at home versus 24-ranked Illinois.
Great team.
Illinois, I mean, they're a solid team. They're
ranked 24. Has been ranked very high this year, kind of came down, and now they're coming back up.
And now they're on the uphill climb again, and IU's in their way. If the Hoosiers can pull off a victory, let's say they win two in a row. Let's say they win Saturday, they wait a week, they beat Illinois. I mean, this team, basically, I mean, they're going to be in the tournament if they can beat Illinois. I think if they beat another team that's top 25 ranked, I think that can give them a check mark to make the tournament.
I think they're in the tournament anyway. I don't think there's any question. I mean, most of the bracketology people has them anywhere between an 8 and a 10 seed right now.
Yeah,
so I think if you beat a team like Illinois, that, like you said, that pretty much solidifies you being in. And that could help a seed. I mean, suddenly your 8 seed could become a 7 or a 6. Mm-hmm. You know, if you continue to win, if Indiana wins out, maybe does well in the Big Ten tournament. I know somebody asked Mike Woodson about the Big Ten tournament. He's like, Big Ten tournament, I want the Big Ten. You know, that's kind of what he
doesn't even worry about the national championship.
Doesn't worry about the Big Ten tournament before the NCAA tournament. So that's what the Hoosiers are looking at. Certainly you want to get the best seed that you can get in the Big Ten tournament so that you don't have to play that first day of the tournament. And having it here in Indianapolis, I believe, this year. It is here.
Yeah.
Back in Indy. It's been in Chicago. It's been in Madison Square Garden, which I never quite understood why the Big Ten tournament was in Madison Square Garden. You know, it was here, of course, during the pandemic, and you know, it'll be good to have the Big Ten tournament here. Also for not only IU, but the Purdue Boilermakers like to have the Big Ten tournament right here in Indiana.
And then they have a couple days off, and then they travel up to Northwestern. And that's a team who is not good this season, but it's a road game for those.
They're scrappy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I watched last night, I before the IU game, I watched the end of the Michigan-Northwestern game, and that game was up at Chrysler Arena, game that probably Northwestern should have been in, but they were right there. Nearly forced overtime, and Michigan got the win down the stretch. But everybody in the Big Ten is beatable. There's not a team in the Big Ten that you're just like, wow, I'm just so intimidated by that team. Maybe Purdue's the closest to that. But nobody in the Big Ten is unbeatable. And anybody in the Big Ten can beat anybody else.
Mm-hmm. And the Big Ten, I mean, we could see teams falling and falling fast. And then they play a 10th-ranked team, but we will talk about that next week. So you're going to have to wait. But that's going to be probably one of their bigger games. But now switching topics, I know Omen covered NFL, what happened in the divisional round when I was out Tuesday, but there's two big games happening this Sunday, an AFC battle and an NFC battle. Probably, I don't think going into this season, anyone would have predicted these to be the matchups at the end of the season, at least in the AFC. But in the AFC at 3 o'clock, it will be the Cincinnati Bengals behind Joe Burrow. I would say has now entered the top five quarterback conversation as well as he's played this season against possibly the number one quarterback in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs, Bengals. And the Bengals, they lost. I mean, they beat the Chiefs in week 17 by good fashion. I mean, this is going to be a close game. In all reality, it should be Bills-Bengals. I mean, the Bills deserve to win that one, but that was a shootout. In the divisional round, Bills versus Chiefs. But I'm going to go on a edge, and I think that the Bengals will win this game. I know the Bengals, they're not a complete team. I think they're still good climbing up that mountain. But I have the Bengals in this one if Joe Burrow has time in the pocket.
Well, I was driving home last Saturday from the Center Grove Ben Davis basketball game, and I listened to an interview on ESPN Radio with Ed Orgeron. He was talking about Joe Burrow and talking about the leadership that he had when he was in LSU, when he was at LSU. And he said that Joe Burrow led a 100-man practice on his own. He got 100 other college football players to do a voluntary workout on their own, and he was leading them to do that. And you know, the ESPN radio guys were thinking, you know, you're making that up. He's like, no, not making it up. It's the truth. You know, it's like Coach O, who should still be coaching somewhere in college football, I think. But Coach O was talking about what kind of leader Joe Burrow is. So when you talk about those intangibles.
Oh, he has it.
He has it. He has it. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, when that guy walks in the room, you know, he's an NFL starting quarterback. And you know, there are only a certain number of players who have it. And he has it. Whatever that is, the what Tom Brady has, what Peyton Manning has, what Eli Manning, you know, what Ryan Fitzpatrick has. I mean, there's just a moxie and something that a quarterback has, and he has it. Patrick Mahomes has it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whatever that is, Joe Burrow has it, and it's just been a lot of fun to watch this Bengals team, even though I haven't seen them yet because I've been busy doing other things when they've been on, but watching this Bengals team just grow and watching them kind of become the team that they've become, it's been impressive, and I think certainly their coaching staff and the Brown family and everybody else deserves a lot of credit for putting this team together. Cause you know, the Brown family gets a lot of
hate,
a lot of, and some of it is deserved. I mean, there are some things that they have in Cincinnati. I mean, they're the only team that doesn't have like an off stadium, a practice facility. You know, there's types of things that you hear, that like just from a player standpoint,
it's like, ugh.
Right. Right. It's like, what, we have Lunchables? That's the food we get? You know, stuff like that that's been well documented. But certainly the Brown family has found the right guy in Joe Burrow to lead their franchise. And they have to make sure they keep him, because I'm sure in a few years when he's a free agent, he'll be targeted.
Oh, there's no way the Bengals let him go. I mean,
you would think so, but it is the Brown family. We're talking about. It is the Bengals. They're you know, the NFL version of the Pacers. They like to run that organization
cheap.
And, you know, that's the way the Brown family has worked. But the Bengals, I love it for not only Cincinnati, but I love it also for their fans.
Mm-hmm.
That is great. The Bengals have great fans. They really do. They're a very loyal fan base, and it's kind of been fun to see some of them come back out of the woodwork. Now, after maybe being away, I mean, I think we as Pacers fans, we understand that. you know, we're kind of like maybe at an arm's length from our team right now. We still love them. We'll still go to war for them. But, you know, you kind of keep them that arm's length. It's good to see people coming out for the Bengals again. And then the Chiefs are just fantastic. I mean,
they do it all.
That game Sunday night was one of the best NFL games I've ever seen. It was kind of a shame that we didn't get to see Josh Allen have a chance to have the football in overtime. It'll be interesting to see if the NFL does anything about that in the offseason. But Patrick Mahomes is by far and away the most electric player in the NFL. How I tweeted 13 seconds and 3 timeouts. Plenty of time, right? Question mark? And I mean, that's, I was joking.
Plenty of time, because the thing is, I'm just going to touch on this because I know we don't have too much time. But you're listening to the Sports Spotlight on WBDG FM HD1 Indianapolis.
We have 30 minutes, right?
Yeah, we have 30 minutes. But the thing is, 13 seconds, 3 timeouts. The Bills played a defense that they were back. Like, they were in a defense preparing for a Hail Mary. And the thing is, they had 3 timeouts and the best quarterback in the league.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm going to play the other side of that. You know, a lot of people have criticized The Bills for kicking it deep instead of squib kicking, kicking it out of the end zone instead of making the Bills return that, make the Chiefs return the kick to kind of run some time. So you kick it deep, Tyreek Hill picks it up and he runs it back for a touchdown. Then you lose right there. And I think, you know, it is, well, he's got 13 seconds, you know, he's not going to get enough. And he did.
He did because the middle of the field was wide open and they had timeouts.
But again, it came down to tying the game instead of, I mean, if you play up and Tyreek Hill gets over the top there, or one of the Chiefs, Travis Kelce, somebody gets over the top there and scores a touchdown, then you lose. So, I mean, the worst case scenario there is you're thinking maybe, okay, let's keep them from scoring a touchdown.
But that's just how scared.
13 seconds.
That's how scared people are of the Chiefs.
Right.
And that's just the crazy thing. If they have 3 timeouts, 13 seconds. If Carson Wentz is the quarterback back there, they're up.
Right. It made sense to do what the Chiefs or what the Bills did defensively. It made sense. I know in hindsight, in retrospect, after Patrick Mahomes goes quickly down the field, if you probably read the textbook, though, of how to coach the NFL, that probably made sense because you didn't want to give up the touchdown. But Patrick Mahomes, I mean, and it was still a 47-yard field goal. So
there's still a challenging field goal. Yeah.
Harrison Butker had
he struggled all game.
Yeah, missed a field goal, missed a PAT. I can't talk all of a sudden. So, you know, that was but the Chiefs are just electrifying. Oof. And man, and how much has their defense improved?
Oh, the last season, towards the end of the year, their defense was nothing.
It was awful. And of course this year it started out to be pretty bad too.
And I mean
they couldn't stop anybody.
Their defense has improved. I still don't think, I mean, they're obviously winning games because their offense. Their defense isn't going to win them a game.
It's not a great defense, certainly, but it's solid. It's good enough when you have that offense. It's kind of like the Colts used to have, you know, when you had Peyton Manning who could put up 35 a game. You just had to make sure the other team scored 34.
Yeah, you know? I mean, the Colts defense back in the day, they had playmakers. It's just they lacked other positions and they lacked depth.
Right.
And I think that's what hurt them. The Chiefs don't really have a superstar on defense besides Tywan Matthew.
And he got hurt.
And he got hurt,
yeah.
And that's whenever their defense kind of went away.
but I'm anxious to see this game on Sunday,
and
I think the Chiefs win. I mean, I don't think the Bengals.
The Chiefs.
But if the Bengals win, I'll be pleasantly surprised.
I mean, I like to pick the upset. I do, deep down. I mean, I wouldn't. I figure the Chiefs will win, but I like to go on an edge, and I'll pick the Bengals. They beat them once. They look really good. I mean, that Titans game was a little bit disappointing. I thought that was going to be a high-scoring game, but it wasn't. But I don't know. But going now to the NFC, the sixth seed taking on their division rivals. I do believe the Rams were a 3. No, 4. No, the Rams, yeah, they were 3. The 6 versus the 3 and division rivals. San Francisco 49ers versus the Los Angeles Rams. The 49ers are what the Colts should have been this season. A team that was no one wanted to play in the playoffs with a decent quarterback and a great defense. And here we are. The Niners did do it. The Colts did not, of course. The 49ers beat Aaron Rodgers in possibly his last game as a Green Bay Packer. 13-10 in a just terrible playing conditions. I mean, it was so cold. A block punt in the fourth quarter led to a score. And the Niners kicked a field goal to win the game 13-10. The Niners now are in this game versus the Rams. The Rams on fire, beating Tom Brady and possibly his final game as an NFL player. I mean, it's rumored. I do expect him to come back, but I could see him retiring. The Rams, I mean, they look hot. Odell Beckham Jr. is playing really well. Cooper Kupp is Cooper Kupp, the offense player of the year. I mean, the Rams... I'm going to pick the Rams because the Rams are the way better team. But I don't know. This 49ers team, I don't want to play them right now, especially how they're pulling out victories against really good teams, and they're winning ugly. Jimmy Garoppolo's banged up. His thumb is injured. And, I mean, even though Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't put up the stats that you want as a quarterback and doesn't look like the best quarterback, if the Niners win this game, he'll be a starting quarterback in the last 2 of the last 3 Super Bowls. That is just something crazy that this team wants to get rid of a quarterback that has, if he does go all the way, that started two of the last three. Obviously, I don't know if he's the franchise guy. He doesn't put up the amazing stats, but he wins. And that's kind of the crazy thing about Jimmy Garoppolo. But, of course, I'm going to take the Rams. I think they're the better team, and I think we're going to see, I mean, we could see that one game from the Monday Night Football in 2018, the Rams-Chiefs, Rams-Bengals. I mean, it could go either way, but I think the Rams are going to win by a big margin. Their offense is just too good.
Well, again, you know, every game this past weekend was just fantastic. And the Rams kind of giving it away to the Buccaneers, and then the Buccaneers kind of give it away to the – I mean, how on earth can Cooper Kupp, of all people, get that open?
Mm-hmm.
In that wide situation? Open. I mean, wide open. And it was just a fantastic game. And then they line up for, you know, the field goal, and they get it done. And, you know, just a fantastic football game.
They almost blew it.
They did. You know, the Rams almost blew that. And, you know, that was just like it was Tom Brady. You know, you get up 27-3 on Tom Brady, you can never count him out, and here come the Buccaneers. So that was a thrilling game. The Rams, though, in the end, they get it done. They kick the last second field goal to move on, a walk-off field goal, another one in this playoffs. We've had so many walk-offs in these playoffs. You had so many field goals, and you had then the walk-off touchdown in the Chiefs-Bills game. But What I like about the Rams is they have just about everything you could ever want, and I know they've done that on purpose. You know, they've looked and they've shopped the free agency market. Mm-hmm. They've clearly done that. They took advantage of some things during the season to get players like Odell Beckham Jr. to kind of shore up some things that they weren't doing. Obviously, they got a guy that can coach in McVay. And certainly I get tired of seeing his chunky soup ads on my Twitter timeline, but the guy can coach. So I think when you look at them, then you look on the other side at the 49ers and you're just like, man, how are the 49ers here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they are, and they do it because they kind of backed into it too. I mean, they've earned it. Don't get me wrong, but the 49ers, if you look at them, they're not going to be the beauty contest winner.
Oh no.
But sometimes in football, ugly wins, and you know, that's what they've been. They've been ugly, but they've made other teams play ugly because of that defense and what they can make you do. So this game is a great offense versus a great defense. Certainly it's not going to have, I think, the hype that the AFC game is going to have. I think people are probably predicting the Rams to just kind of walk away with this one. But I think the 49ers have a good chance.
They have a shot.
And certainly there in SoFi, it's, you know, you're not that far away from San Francisco, so it's not like you're flying
and
halfway across the country to play it.
And there's a lot of things with tickets.
Yeah.
So the Rams said you can only buy tickets if you live in that area. But
right.
That has since been removed. And obviously Ram fans can sell tickets, or people that live in that area, to 49ers fans.
Are there Rams fans?
No. That's the thing. LA is a Raiders fan base.
It's a Raiders. Still a Raiders town.
And it's even worse for the Chargers because right. No one likes them.
No one likes the Chargers.
No one. Like, it is just so bad. You go to a Chargers game, and the other team.
And, you know, there was some maneuvering, and, you know, that's why the Rams even ended up back in L.A. But certainly they belong in L.A., I think. Unless you say they belong in Cleveland, where they were originally. But the Rams, they're the Los Angeles Rams to me. I know the
Chargers don't belong there, though.
For people, well, they were the Los Angeles Chargers when they started out too, and they moved to San Diego, and then they moved back to Los Angeles.
Well, so they need to go somewhere they can get fans,
right? But you know, there's a huge Raiders fan base in Los Angeles, and they still love the Raiders there. But that's beside the point. I think the Rams. You know what? I'll pick the 49ers in this one. Just to go
ahead
and pick the. And so my Super Bowl will be the Chiefs and the 49ers.
Again. And will Jimmy G miss a receiver deep at the end of the game to possibly win it? I don't know. That would be something.
Yeah.
But, hey, I could definitely see the Niners winning this game. Do I think it's going to happen? No. because Stafford and Kupp have been playing so well, but Deebo Samuel's a beast.
And I would like to see Matt Stafford get into the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, he deserves it. He's been in the league so long.
And especially, you know, he took a lot of crap this year. Pardon my French. He took a lot of stuff this year, which I think was unwarranted. You know, certainly I think that people understand the kind of quarterback he's been over his career. And the cool thing was, and I saw this more than once, people in Detroit are rooting for Matt Stafford.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of shows you the kind of person that he is. You know, the Lions fans are rooting for him, so pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. And hey, I like to see the Rams win it. I'd like to see Stafford get a ring.
So you have the Bengals and the Rams, and I have
the Chiefs and the Niners.
Chiefs and the Niners.
I could see the Chiefs. I mean, I could see all four of these games going either way. All two of these games going either way, all four teams.
I think probably the NFL, I mean, I don't go into conspiracy theories, but the NFL will win no matter which one of these four teams makes it in. I think there's a lot of good stories.
Oh, yeah.
I think they probably are rooting for the Rams and the Chiefs, but you never know. I mean, Joe Burrow and the Bengals would be a great story.
The Niners have a great fan base.
And the Niners have a wonderful fan base. I mean, they're the San Francisco 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't wear those ugly uniforms.
Oh, my.
In the Super Bowl. Wear your gold pants and your white jersey or the maroon jersey. I mean, you know, that's 49ers for me.
Yeah, they have some funky colors.
I don't understand the white pants thing. I know it's like the throwback and like to the 1996 team or whatever they're trying to do, but
I guess
I don't like it.
Yeah, but this is going to really wrap up here on the Sports Spotlight. If you missed the start of the show, Eddie Gill joined us for about 25 minutes talking Indiana Pacers and a little bit about what he does for the Indiana Pacers. So if you like to listen to that interview and more, you can listen to the whole show up on any streaming device later this afternoon. And then we'll be back next Tuesday, so make sure to tune in then. And if you're listening to this on podcasts or any other way, they come out every Tuesday and Thursday, really after we go off air. But for Jackson White, John Easter, thanks for joining me. Owen Pooley, you also joined. Thanks for joining me as well. And Eddie Gill for being our special guest today. It's been a good one. We'll see you next Tuesday.